Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
We're glad you chose the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's, home of the $5 Biggie Bag. 104.5 The Zone. For the next hour, Titans discussion, NFL roster discussion, with the former NFL scout, Titan scout for 19 seasons, Blake Bedingfield, in studio with us each Tuesday at 11 a.m. You can read his work at paulkoharski.com. It was a very thorough assessment of the Titans preseason game against the New England Patriots.
That one is unlocked, so go find it. Read it.
Blake, good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
How are things?
Things are great. It's a good day to be here inside, not in the 103-degree heat.
A little, yeah, that's right. It's better, right?
That's right.
Getting warnings on my phone. You know it's bad.
How many of the Titans 53 are not yet set?
You know, I think there's quite a few, actually. But it's not set because of there's a lot of competition at those spots. I think there's some holes. And, you know, if you look at a five to six player range, there's some holes there. There's some players from other cuts or maybe a potential trade that will end up filling out some of those spots in that five and six range to fill out the 53-man roster.
More than an average year? I know you're not inside the building, but, I mean, just assessing the roster, does it seem like one or two extra spots than normal?
You know, yes, because more than that, it depends on when you have what kind of roster you're trying to create. Are you trying to create a playoff push roster? Are you trying to create a roster that, okay, we're kind of in a somewhat rebuilding mode? Well, this isn't a rebuilding mode. This is everyone's in their prime of their careers. It's a playoff push roster. So you would want to have 18 different years have been a part of the Titans, and when we decided on rosters, usually you would have 55 to 57 players that you love for those 53 spots. And you know, you're trying to figure out those positions on special teams. How many are you going to carry at a certain spot? You know, if there's an injured guy going into the first couple of games, do we carry someone heavy at a certain position? I don't see 55 or 57 on this roster that have a chance. You know, you're looking more in that at this point, after two preseason games, maybe that 45 range, 45, 46, and then the other positions have to be settled out. You know, having some special teams players, are you going to be heavy at a tight end position? How many outside linebackers are you going to carry? Are those extra outside linebackers even on this roster right now? You know, do you want more of a veteran or rookies to fill out the bottom of that roster? You know, last year they kept the Sharif Finch, who ended up being a very good player, undrafted rookie. Aaron Stinney, who didn't really play at all, and Matt Dickerson, who played very limited, especially in the last game when Jarrell Casey was out. So, you know, there were some players that were kept for developmental purposes, but really didn't play much of a role except for Finch, and they've been rewarded by Finch this year because he's basically like an extra draft choice.
Blake Bedingfield with us. Let's stick with the defense for a moment.
Hold on. Let me follow up on that. What's kind of created that? So the four-man draft last year clearly helped create a little bit of that lack of first off, how concerned is a GM when 45 to 53 maybe isn't that great? Obviously, that's the least important part of the roster, but you'd like to be solid all the way through. And then you had the four-man draft class that turned into a three-man draft class. Now you've got a guy on NFI that you knew coming in. You've lost DeAndre Walker, so there's two out of this draft that aren't factors, at least for now. Then you traded picks for, you know, we go back, David King, Correa. David King's already gone. Correa, there's one or two others that I'm thinking there. It's kind of a cumulative effect over the span of maybe 3 years that's kind of gradually undone maybe those last five spots?
You know, I think when you see the short numbers in your draft class, that really has an impact. You have to have the – if you're going to have those situations, you're going to have the Sharif Finches. You know, you're going to have more than just the one, especially out of a four-man draft class that ended up being a three-man draft class with Luke Falk no longer on the team. In this year, like you mentioned, a six-man draft class that now you're down to four that are going to play this year since Walker's out and Simmons is to be determined. So that really hits. When you're talking about seven out of 2 years, that should be 14 on a minimum year. So, you know, that other players have to come in. What do? Do you oversign with veterans? You know, where the Titans have spent is they spent for quality. They've gone out and paid for a Deion Lewis and a Malcolm Butler. In certain years, they paid for a Sylvester Williams at a nose tackle or a Benny Logan. You know, this past year, you know, you go out and pay for a Roger Saffold. You're paying for quality. But at some point, you have to build the roster with some quantity, too, because what ends up happening is in week 17 of last year, Matt Dickerson has to be active when a Jarrell Casey's out for the game. And we're not talking about even close to the same type of player. You're talking about a Dickerson who you want to develop as a player that now has to rush Andrew Luck as a passer. So, you know, you would rather have a veteran in that spot, someone that can give you a one-game pass rush or the ability to play a high number snap. So there's been a lot created by paying in free agency for the quality but not filling out your roster with enough quantity to fill out the back-end spots.
So do you think Isaiah Mack fits into that category you're discussing of an undrafted guy who could stick?
I think in the two preseason games, if he is participating in practice and playing in practice like he has in those two preseason games, then yes. He's a player that not only has some development to his game that he can work on, but he's a guy that can come in and give some meaningful reps. And I'm not talking about 20 to 30 a game because you're going to see a lot of inconsistencies there, but you're talking that 10, 12 snaps that maybe a Benny Logan got last year for $4 million a year or Sylvester Williams got for $4 million the year before that. Same amount of reps, but a cheap version of the player that can give you some opportunities in the run and pass game.
Is Mac, and I don't mean this as a knock on him at all. I'm simply watching the game. You've scouted the game. Is he more than just an effort guy? Because he's clearly the hustler. Is he more than that?
You know, I tell you what, he's got a little punch to him. He's got some strength. I like the way he gets off the ball. Even on that sack he had a plan going into that rush. Right off the snap, he had an immediate rake, close, finish. That's great for a defensive tackle to see that. You know, he got to the outside edge of the guard, beat him immediately, and closed to the quarterback. There was no hesitation in his play. Love the effort. You love the effort in some players like mm-hmm. that. Not only trying to make the team, but you're showing skill and confidence in your own ability. And I think he's starting to see it. Now he's gaining that confidence in game situations. And I think this week is a good week to see him play with the regulars. If Pittsburgh ends up having more of their starting offensive line, let's see him go up against a David DeCastro. Let's see him go up against guys that he's going to face during the 16-week season.
I think we talk about Mac, we've got to talk about Bledsoe, who got the start here and played a little at linebacker as well as at up on the line. Obviously, that's a versatility thing that they've got to like if they think he can do both. What did he make of that opportunity? What do you think of him?
Total opposite. I think Isaiah Mack's not a guy that you look at physically and say, well, I love what he's bringing physically to the table. No, he's more of a player. Armani is a player that looks the part. He looks like he's going to be a player. I didn't see it in the game this week when he got the extended reps. He was a player that didn't recognize blocking techniques at times. He got cracked on a couple of outside run plays where he didn't feel that outside block. He got reached and covered up with a one-on-one block. You know, those are things that he's got to be better at. Now, physically, he looks the part, a little bit like Dickerson last year. If you looked at Matt Dickerson, you said, wow, he's got a good frame. He could maybe fill out. He can maybe develop. You know, he's got that same type frame, but he just isn't making the plays, which will be a hard to have him on the roster because he's going to end up being Stinney or Dickerson where he's inactive every week. But at some point in a 17-week, 16-game season, he's going to have to play, and can he develop in that short amount of time?
Poyer, the backup quarterback, has gone all the way. We saw Tom Brady in warm-ups. He didn't really warm up. Titans pressuring. Sack! Oh, how about some iMac? Isaiah Mack.
Midday 180, served up by Wendy's, over the $5 biggie bag. Isaiah Mack, one of the players pushing for a roster spot. We'll get Blake's take on Jeremy McNichols coming up later this hour. Let's stay on defense, though, Blake, and let's talk about...
Can I ask one follow-up on Isaiah Mack, Hutton, before you get to that? Because we were going to talk about this in the last break, too. Effort versus ability. We talked a lot about his ability. You mentioned his effort. When you're looking for a guy at the back end of a roster like that that may give you 10 to 12 plays, and you're not looking for a constant player that's out there all the time, I think it's funny when we talk about guys in camp, it's, oh, he's a good effort guy. Well, how far does effort really get you when you're evaluating a player? But how much more important is it when you see a guy that brings a high level of effort that's only going to be out there for 10 or 12 plays, where you know you're going to get something out of them in the effort department while they're out there?
You know, I think it's important because from play one, he's got to bring that energy. And I'm going to go back to, you know, early Titan days with Joe Salavea. If Joe Salavea, Joe did not have great technique or fundamentals.
Salavea, that's a good name from the past.
You're talking about a guy who played 15 snaps a game, and he looked like he played 65 when he was done that game. He was beat up, but the energy that he brought to a Javon Kearse, to a Josh Evans, to that defensive line when he came on the field was valuable because he brought it. He brought it when those other guys are playing, you know, 70% of the snaps. And Joe Salavea is coming in with his 15 with energy. They're feeling it and playing with it. Kenny Holmes, all those guys, they fed off him. So if Isaiah Mack can bring that energy and be that guy that kind of, you know, ignites it, the main pass rushers, maybe a Jarrell, maybe a, you know, whoever's on the field at the time, a Harold Landry or Cameron Wake, that's a great thing to have. Now, the expectations for him won't be to eventually play 60% of the snaps, 70% of the snaps. It will be that 12 to 15 plays of the game. If Jarrell Casey or somebody valuable goes down, you're going to have to find somebody else to fill that spot. And Isaiah Mack's not going to come in and play that main role.
They are thin at outside linebacker depth.
No doubt.
Not playing Landry, is there any better signal of being thin at outside linebacker than not playing him in a preseason game?
No, I think that's a clear indication of they want to keep him healthy going into the season. He had some nicks last year that you know, they want to avoid this year. Cameron Wake doesn't need to play in the preseason. Keep him healthy. Let him play his, pass rush snaps when the game starts. He's a guy that's proved to be a veteran and a pass rusher from week one.
I think you'd be surprised how little he practices in the team period.
And I'm actually okay with that. You know, you're talking about a 37, 38-year-old guy. He's up there in age, but even though he's in great shape, let's keep him healthy. But Harold Landry, this is a second-year guy that didn't dominate by any stretch as a rookie, but showed flashes of it. You know, I know he's getting good work in practice. If he's going against LaJuan and Conklin, and you're talking about legit guys.
And he had a ton of work against the Patriots, a lot of reps.
And that's good. That's valuable stuff. But at some point, his new pass rush moves, which he has had to develop over the offseason, do you want that to be in week one versus Cleveland? Do you want that to be because that's if you're hiding a pass rush move, it's out there after the first game. So week two, week three, week four, everybody knows what you're doing. But I think they are trying to keep him healthy.
Do you think if he was demanding to be out there to get some work, they'd put him out there? And I think the example is Delanie Walker, where he basically said, I want to play. It's time for me to get out there and play a little bit. And they listened to him.
You know, I think different
coaches listen a lot of times to guys like that. They're that up there in their career. Do they protect them against themselves at times?
I think you'll definitely listen to a Delanie Walker that just wanted to test it. You know, go in a game situation and test that ankle. And obviously they had some design passes for him that – were very successful and showed he looked like the old Delanie, which is great. So, you know, I think he's saying, I want to play. They would have probably held him out too. He's a guy that doesn't necessarily need the preseason, but one of those snaps and one of those reps. But, you know, going back to Harold Landry, he needs as much opportunity to really hone in his skills moving forward to the season. It's going to be tough week one without a lot of snaps, you know, in pressurized situations. Going against ones, going against the starting left and right tackle on a consistent basis in a pressured position.
Not one team period since things started has Mariota had Davis, Humphreys, Brown, Walker, Henry. Is that a big deal to you?
you know, as a quarterback, you would want to have all of your weapons to kind of get a feel for where everybody else is on the field, how they run their routes. You know, a part of that is, you know, that they have so many players that do a lot of the same things, meaning like a Humphreys and a Walker are going to work the inside of the field. Davis, how he's looking on that second level of the route common or route trees. You know, how is A.J. Brown looking as an outside receiver? You know, what does Taywan Taylor look like different, you know, on certain play calls when he's asked to stretch the field vertically and Humphreys and Walker are working the inside? You know, I think that for a quarterback, you want to have that in your mind and practice seven on sevens, all those kind of things. Not week one versus the Cleveland Browns when Miles Garrett's breathing down your neck from the backside and Olivier Vernon's coming to your front side. You would rather have that in a practice format where or situation where you can work it in your head and have a comfort of, hey, Taywan's not going to be able to get to that route before the rush. I'm going to be checking down to Delaney and Adam Humphrey. So, you know, in his mind, he wants to have that success of maybe a third down play in that situation.
Blake Bedingfield with us. You know, I see reports across the league of guys not practicing. The Rams went to Hawaii for a preseason game and left 20 of their 22 starters in California. I mean, so I don't know if there is a right or wrong answer to how much preseason time is needed for an offense or defense to get going for week one. But I think it is team to team. What do you think this team needs, this Titans team offensively? What's ideal?
You know, because
Delaney, as you mentioned, we don't need to see him in the preseason. But does Marcus?
I think they do. I think they need some success. You saw in this last preseason game, I doubt they would have played the third series if they didn't have two, three and outs in a row on the first two. So you wanted to have some success. You know, see A.J. Brown on the field a little bit. Obviously get Corey Davis involved, get Delaney involved. Get some of the players that are going to be making plays for you during the season, get them involved with Marcus. You know, they want to work out the offensive line situation. This was Saffold's first preseason game, working alongside Kelly and Ben Jones. This is brand new for all of them. Even though they're doing it in practice, this is something in a game situation. Ben Jones is going to be controlling and making the calls, and Saffold's got to be there to kind of deliver and pass it to Kelly or whatever the situation is. So these are things that got to be worked out in a game situation. So I think it's important for this offensive unit to have some success. Defensively, not as much. You know, I think you start to have to find out the roles of players. What is Rashawn Evans going to be on this team? Is he going to be an outside rusher? Is he going to be just an inside player? I think he can do both. Well, you know, start to show a little bit more of that in the third preseason game. It's not a shock what Rashawn Evans does. Every team knows he was an outside rusher at Alabama until his last year. So, you know, this isn't going to be a shock walking into the season. But, you know, I don't think a Logan Ryan and a Malcolm Butler and those guys need as much work. Let's figure out the Ty Smiths and the LaShawn Sims and those type players. You know, Kenny Vaccaro and Kevin Byard, you're fine. You know, get a couple reps in, but it's not as important for the defense as I think this offense.
Paul, you went to the 53 yesterday, and you had four pass rushers. You had Wake and Landry, Finch and Correa, and then after that you were struggling to find your fifth guy, right?
Yeah. I ended up keeping the two kids. I mean, I put Bledsoe there because I think they see him as kind of a versatile guy. And who's the other one? Hell, I can't even remember.
I don't know, but you had Dickerson on the roster.
Yeah.
You talking about Derek Roberson?
Roberson. Yeah.
So,
sorry.
You know, you look at the outside linebacker position, I see three.
They like Roberson, but, I mean, is he going to do anything for him now? I don't
know. You know, I see three rushers. I see a Finch who can play base, which means on rundowns, and rush the passer.
Good anchor to him.
I do. I think he can play as long as he stays healthy. That's been his kind of bugaboo for his entire career going back to college.
So far here.
And that's great because I like the way he plays. I think he's strong on the strong side of the defense where he can take on a tight end and a tackle, take on some doubles at times. Harold Landry's going to play more of that open side, I would suspect. And Cameron Wake is, I would think, going to be more of a situational pass rush player, not someone that's going to line up on in your base defense. Well, who's going to be the other guy? Well, Camilia Correa's been a up-and-down player. You know, he plays with good energy, plays with good effort, but doesn't make a lot of plays. And that's not a player you want playing 40 and 50 snaps. He's a player you want playing 10 or 15 snaps.
Hutton points out he's a healthy scratch a bunch.
And that's what's going to – that this guy has to play this year. There's not another guy on the roster right now, not Derek Roberson. Derek Roberson looks the part, has some traits that you want to develop, but can you afford a 53-man roster spot? Probably right now with the makeup of this team, yes, you can. But he's going to be the inactive every week, kind of like we were talking about with the Stennies and the Dickersons last year. But at some point, he's going to have to play. Cameron Wake's up there in age. Harold Landry's had some injuries. Finch has had some injuries. Some point, these guys are going to have to play. Who's your fourth, fifth guy off the
bench? Isn't there a difference, though, in – so Roberson, they clearly like him. And they worked him out privately in the draft with Vrabel. Do you see – like, maybe you don't see him as a true NFL-caliber player yet, but do you see that on the horizon? Whereas there are other instances where – a guy makes a roster because of depth concerns that we're discussing. You're like, yeah, normally this guy's practice squad at best.
You know, I see a practice squad player. And what I mean by Roberson, and I wrote on paulkaharski.com, was a player that played like he had a seatbelt on, which means he was cautious and he needs to turn it loose because he has some athletic traits. And when players play like that, they're really kind of unsure of their role. Was he unsure of, you know, which gap he was supposed to be in? Was he worried about a run play instead of just rushing the passer? Those are things. Well, if he has to play in week two or three, you know, that's still going to be a problem. He's going to have to develop. He has some physical traits. He's done nothing on film right now where you would think another team would pick him up and put him on the 53. So, you know, he's probably a guy you could get to the practice squad.
104.5 The Zone is kicking off the college football season with a football kickoff party at Corner Pub on 5th, Thursday, August 29th. Join The Zone at Corner Pub downtown on 5th Avenue. Catch all the Thursday night games with us and register to win Tennessee and Vanderbilt football season tickets. Must be present to win. Come watch opening night on a giant 50-foot LED TV wall and over 20 75-inch TVs with us at Corner Pub on 5th, Thursday, August 29th. Get all the details now at 1045thezone.com.
Tannehill against a five-man front. We're going out of the backfield. McNichols wide open, left flat. He's at the 10. He's at the 5. He flips into the end zone. Touchdown! Titans! Jeremy McNichols, acrobatic to Peter.
So a lot of shows are going to discuss whether or not they would keep Jeremy McNichols. With Blake Bedingfield here, let's get into the reasons why you would keep Jeremy McNichols on this Titans roster. And is it based solely on the possibility of him ultimately being Deion Lewis's replacement?
You know, that's a good way to put it, because what he could – Jeremy does everything well. He can run the ball. He catches the ball extremely well. I've even seen him in pass protection where he'll stick his nose in there. He doesn't have the weight of a Derrick Henry, but neither does a Deion Lewis. Deion Lewis, in this pass game, stuck his nose in there versus a blitzing middle linebacker, got pushed into Marcus's pocket, but he still stuck his head in there and gave great effort. Nichols is going to do the same thing. So, you know, the one thing that Nichols doesn't do as a third running back is be your special teams player like a David Fluellen. David Fluellen's been a staple on special teams. He brings linebacker size to that position when he's running down the field covering kicks. He can play a different role. What's McNichols' role on special teams? That's going to be a tough thing to figure out if you're going to keep – if you're keeping four running backs, he's inactive anyway. If you're keeping if he's your third, now he has to be a core special teams player like a Fluellen, just to maybe have that opportunity late in the season when an injury occurs to be a one or two. I think what I do is I look back, I go with a third running back, I sit there and go, can he ever be your one or two? I don't really see that. I don't see a one or two in him. He's definitely not a one. As a two, he would have to fill in for a Deion Lewis. But Deion has had success being a running back in the past. Not as much last year, but with the Patriots. But a very good receiver. Can McNichols be that dynamic as a receiver like Deion, because I think Deion is still a very good outlet receiver.
So what I'm hearing is, while McNichols has had a very good preseason in camp, you can find an example of him on every roster in this league.
You know, I think you can. What ends up happening where McNichols is solid is he's a solid runner and receiver. I think what you're looking for is, if you're looking for a cut player, you're going to find one or the other. And this kid actually does both well. He's not great on any in any one category, but he does both well. My thing is where's the spot for him? I don't see him better than a David Flewellen just because of the Flewellen's ability on special teams. So he's a fourth running back if you kept him. And in hope for an injury situation when, you know, he's there for you, which is not a bad thing to have if you can afford that roster spot. Because I think he's done enough in the first two preseason games. When he's had opportunities, he's made two long runs. I know it's been blocked up and whatever, but he's made those runs. And he didn't run into a defender. He didn't run into a blocker. He was patient pressing the hole. He had a little bit of a burst to take at the distance. And that's what you want to see out of these backs. And then he had the ability to catch the ball in the backfield as well.
615-737-1045 if you want to talk with Blake.
You say when you look at a third, you ask, could he ever be your one or two? Could Flewellen ever be a one or two?
You know, I think in a situation where for a full season, no, he's not. But he's a very good special teams player, which I don't see out of McNichols yet.
He's on the fifth roster.
No question. And I think that's where, you know, is he going to run down and cover kicks and blow up players? I don't see that in him. He's going to play a different spot than a Flewellen covering punts or covering kickoffs. Not that kickoffs are as important as they used to be, but he's not going to be that middle wedge guy. Not that there's really a wedge anymore, but you still have to be physical. And Flewellen having that 230-pound linebacker size is really a plus compared to a 205, 210-pounder.
Who strikes you beyond the guys we know, like Bates and Jennings, who've been core special teams guys and clearly have a defined role here and are likely to be on the team largely because of that defined special teams role, who among the batch now stand out on special teams doesn't?
You know, I like LaShawn Sims. Always have liked LaShawn on special teams. I think he brings brings good speed, but he brings instincts to that position as well, which I think you have to have. It's a different skill trait to be able to play special teams, especially with everything around you coming around, blocking other players, your own players. He does a great job of finding the ball, breaking down in space, and making tackles. I think Ty Smith does as well. But you're talking about the same position. One of them's going to be inactive on game days. They're both not going to play. I think Cruikshank is become a really good special teams player. His aggressive style plays into that type of play because he'll run down and he'll cover kicks and he brings an aggressive play. I haven't seen it out of Armani Hooker yet. That's something he's going to have to bring as more of a special teams presence. I think he's got the intelligence and the instincts to do it. I just haven't seen it yet on film in the first two games. But Sharif Finch has always been a good special teamer. You know, that's another trait that he brings, not only as a base outside linebacker, but, you know, he's a very good special teams player. But how much are you going to want him playing on teams? Harold Landry's not going to play much on cover units. Cameron Wake's definitely not. You know, now you got to find those spots. Yeah, Darren Bates is. David Long's probably not active because, you know, if you're keeping five inside backers, Wesley Woodard's up, Rashawn Evans, which Rashawn's a good special teamer, but how much do you want your inside backer running down on kickoffs and punts?
How about tight ends?
You know, I don't see a tight end that has a trait that actually covered. Jonnu Smith really was never a really good special teams player, even though he has the physical traits to do it. He's got speed, he's got size, athleticism. Ferkser's definitely not a special teamer. And, you know, there are players like Ferkser that go back, even tight ends at times have to play teams. Ryan Hewitt's not a special teams type player, and I didn't think Mykael Pruitt is either. So, you know, you're talking about that back end of that tight end group. They have, if they're going to be active, they have to be on those teams.
So those back end linebackers and back end tight ends need to step it up.
If they're going to be active on game days, they have to.
What about Roberson?
You know, Roberson, I haven't seen, again, the aggressiveness and the instincts to go down and cover. Does he have the physical traits? There's no question about it. He's got that size and that straight line speed that you want to see covering kicks. It's just not there yet.
So who's the guy that's taking McNichols' job because he can play special teams better than McNichols?
You know, it's going to have to be, it's probably not on this roster, but it's going to have to be another outside linebacker. It's going to have to be, you know, Correa. If you're the fourth outside linebacker, you got to be a dog on special teams.
So Paul, go ahead.
How's Correa?
He's just a guy. He's just a guy on special teams. He's a little bit like he is on defense. He's out of position at times. He's got some aggressiveness and some energy in his play, but he's not always where he's supposed to be.
So we're about to, when roster cuts are made, waiver claims are made, will we see something like we saw from the Tim Shaw addition to that roster?
Patrick Bailey.
Patrick Bailey type where you get a linebacker that is strictly a special teams ace that can give you a few snaps if you need it on game day, but he's active. He's one of your 46.
No question. Somebody at that outside linebacker position that can give you some rush snaps, but also be a core special teamer. Because, you know, I don't know what Flewellen's injury is, but, you know, he hasn't played yet. But, you know, he's a guy that you're going to count on. But you want the Kevin Byards and those type, which Kevin is an outstanding special teamer, but you want him off teams. Now he's a multi-million-dollar safety. You don't want to take that chance with him playing all the special team snaps.
Sounds like some of these guys are going to be pressed into it at this stage, right? I mean, Logan and Butler play on at least one team.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like Woodyard has been, will be. You know, Byard might have to be on one.
Well, you're going to have a Dory and players like that. If Logan's going to be a starting outside corner on you know, base downs, which is shown in preseason, Dory's going to have to be a cover guy. And that's fine. He's got the speed. He's got those traits. You got to buy into it, too. I think that's a big part of special teams. As a starter, you got to buy into that role.
You mentioned dogs on special teams. Are there a plethora of those guys that come available when they start whittling down rosters across the league that you can go and get?
You know, it's always – I would be looking at the rosters that are heavy at a certain position, drafted heavy at a certain position, where GMs that just don't want to cut their draft choices, and they may let a guy that's a good special teamer go because they just overdrafted him at a certain position. So those are the rosters that I'm really looking
at. That's where they come available.
No question. But, you know, a core special teamer like a Darren Bates, who doesn't do a lot on defense, he's going to make this team again because he is a good special teams player.
You put A.J. Brown out there?
That's risky. I mean, he's got size. He's got the athleticism to do it. But, you know, you're counting on him a lot at the receiver position. That's why Corey Davis and an Adam Humphries and really a Tajay Sharp's not a special teamer. Really a Taywan Taylor's not a special teamer.
You're only getting one?
You know, you got Darius Jennings out of that whole group. That's the problem with this group is that at running back, Derek and Deion are not special teamers, Flewellen only. No tight ends and one receiver.
How is Hewitt not a good special teamer?
It's not, he doesn't have great speed. You know, so
but he we would say bang hats. The guy is physical.
I like his physicality in it, but that's better at that H back fullback position. Yeah. And you know, it's kinda like Luke Stocker. You know, why wasn't he a really good special teamer? So, same reason. Didn't have great speed to run down cover kicks and partly be able to break down in space and maintain your balance and body control to make a tackle.
Today is Titans Ticket Tuesday. We've got a pair of Titans and Steelers tickets this Sunday night's game. We'll ask for caller 5 coming up at 12:05. Blake Bedingfield with us. Blake, is Kevin Pomfield going to be the right guard simply because no one can push him for competition?
You know, with Nate Davis, the third-round draft choice, not playing in preseason, he's going to have to be. Jamil Douglas has not done enough, I would think, to secure a spot.
Is he on the
roster? No, I wouldn't think so. Now, maybe he's on the roster in the setup for the first four games with LaJuan being suspended. You're going to have somebody there. Pamphill can play tackle as well, especially with Kelly and Conklin. And Pamphill's one of your active players and if he's not the starting guard. That's the thing. So, you know, Jamil Douglas will probably make this roster, I would think, just because of all the snaps and reps he's gotten in preseason and will get for the next two games.
I think it was day two of camp. He was getting reps with the first team at right guard. I mean, right out of the gate.
Day three. The first 2 days, they definitely went with this line that we then saw them use against the Patriots predominantly. But don't you think they can upgrade on Douglas and these tackles who've been horrible and we saw Vinovich destroy? I mean, they got to be able to do better than that. Cuts.
You can do better than that, but the problem is Nate Davis is going to be inactive, I would think, for the first game. So you're going to keep at least 7 active. Corey Levin's going to be your center guard backup. I would think Jamil Douglas makes the team as a guard backup, and then if a situation comes up and they need a guard or need a tackle, Pamphield goes into tackle. Douglas slides into one of the guard spots.
So you don't keep a tackle, per se.
Well, yeah, I think you're going to have to go get one. Extra tackle. And he's not on the roster. Yeah. You know, I don't see another tackle that's on the roster right now that really should make this team. Even
Merritt's
in a
time
pinch.
Is up, and, Merritt's and time. He's behind up. Pastor.
They're both. You've got to find another player there because in this last preseason game, they were both beat badly. And they've given them plenty of opportunities, just like Douglas. They really gave him a lot of opportunities. They played him at left guard, right guard, and center to really secure a three-position backup spot.
How do you, Blake, evaluate the battle between Hewitt and Pruitt? And is there a chance both could make this roster because Lawan's not available for the first month of the season?
You know, it's a possibility, but I don't see them being active on game day. And so when you start to make out that 53-man roster, you're like, who is active? Are we really afraid to lose a Mykael Pruitt because of Ryan Hewitt's a better blocker? Probably not. You know, you can go find that position, especially if you're keeping an Anthony Firkser, too, who's a receiver first. You got John New, obviously Delaney. So you've got a big group there. None of them are special teams players, again, like we're talking about. So who's your better player on active on game days? Well, I think Ryan Hewitt is. Ryan's a better lead blocker. He's a better fullback, better H-back. He's a tougher player, brings more of a physicality to the game. If you're looking for a receiver, you're going to have Anthony Firkser as that backup to John New and Delaney going to run routes.
Is there any – we were discussing this before you came in. Maybe you heard it, maybe you didn't. You've got Delaney and John New on the roster. If you want to keep four, is there a chance Firkser is the odd man out only because he's not going to block anybody and the other two would?
You know, I think Firkser brings a trait, and he's got really good hands, and he's a good route runner, and he's got a good enough speed to play that role of a Delaney if he happens to miss some time, yeah, like he did last year, or, you know, even John U's spot as well. Because who knows what John U's going to look like walking in. I mean, this is a guy that's coming off an ACL tear. Is he going to have the same juice in his legs that he had last year? Because that's one of his singular traits is his speed and athleticism. If he doesn't have that, John U may not be the player that's active right now.
And, you know, I'm not trying to knock Anthony Firkser because I think he's better than Pruitt or Hewitt.
He's quicker picked up somewhere else, I would think.
But is his value larger for the first month to this roster? If they want to be a run-based team offensively, is it better for this team to keep a Mykael Pruitt and a Hewitt over a Firkser because you have Delaney and John U, who you prefer over Anthony Firkser anyway?
See, I haven't seen the blocking out of Mykael Pruitt that says he is an outstanding Y on the line, in line, tight end, that he's an excellent blocker. I haven't seen that.
Okay.
I've seen Hewitt, and I like his blocking ability. I like him a lot better than Stocker, actually, from last year, because I wasn't as high on Stocker. I think Hewitt's a much better blocker. I think he's more physical. I think he covers up guys. I think he wants to finish blocks, which is really what you want in that role. I haven't seen Mykael Pruitt do it to where I just say he's a – excellent blocking tight end. I do think Firkser is an excellent receiver with good hands. You know, the speed is adequate, which keeps him from being an upper tier player.
You wrote you have concerns about Dennis Kelly. With those concerns about Dennis Kelly in the first month, might it actually dictate some changes in who the Titans roll out personnel-wise? Will they have to maybe be less three wide if they really want to be three wide to get another tight end on the field to help Kelly? Will it delay Delaney if they do go three wide and make him stay in and chip? Is Derrick Henry going to be more obligated to stay in and play on that Kelly guy? And then if Kelly's getting all the help from whomever, is Conklin all of a sudden on an island he wasn't on previously because he was the guy getting the help when Lawan could take care of things by himself?
You know, I think when you ask that question, I say yes, because the first game of the year is Myles Garrett, elite pass rusher. He's going to come off the edge, but he can also work inside and out. Where Dennis Kelly has had problems is with his inside hand at left tackle. That doesn't show up at right tackle because that's his outside hand, and all he has to do is overset to protect that inside or that right hand. So, but on the inside, he struggles a little bit, and he struggled with that outside end pass rusher. Myles Garrett can bend with the best of them, and he has the size and speed. Once he gets that crease, you can't lock him out. You're going to be grabbing his ankles, and hopefully he doesn't hit your quarterback. Now, they haven't had Saffold in there very much, especially in the first game. In the second game, he was in there more. You know, Saffold's going to be there to help him out. You're going to see a lot of sliding in that direction, especially if Garrett is lined up on top of Dennis Kelly. But you're also going to have that chipper. You're going to have the Deion Lewis or Derek be a chip, but also have other parts of your game, tight end screens. If John New has that speed back, you can run some tight end screens on that side where he's not chipping, and he's keeping Myles Garrett in, and he's running screens over to that side. Instead of Deion Lewis coming up and chipping that outside backer, now he's in the flats as a outlet. So, you know, there's some things they can do to counter that pass rush, but they're going to help him out, especially when you talk about Yannick Ngakoue with the Jaguars and Myles Garrett. Those are two really good pass rushers that he can't handle one-on-one for the whole game.
Leave us with your thoughts and assessment of Mariota with the first team offense from the three series you saw.
You know, I liked it, and I would have loved to have seen Humphreys in there with Delaney. You know, you saw the comfort level with Humphreys in the first game, and you saw the comfort level with Delaney in the second game. I would like to see, and hopefully we'll see maybe this week, see them both on the field at the same time. I think you're going to see a much more calm Mariota. I think he was much better with his footwork, which we kind of got on the first week. He looked more comfortable and patient. I think Tannehill did as well, not to get off onto him. But, you know, I think, you know, both of them looked very comfortable in the second week. I thought Tannehill did in the first, but Mariota was much better in that second week, what they asked him to do. Even on some of those, the corner route that they repeated from the first game, and Corey Davis dropped but should have had it, the deep inside dig to Corey Davis down the field.
Blake, thank you. We'll be reading your work at paulgaharski.com.
Terrific hour. Thanks.
My pleasure. I enjoy being here.
They're all terrific. All of them.